Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastumavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai. Okay, so then we're on Bhakti Sandarbha. Worship of the demigods is condemned. Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 2. Okay, so then Adhikarana 2, worship of the demigods is condemned. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having established the superiority of the process of worship of God, of the Lord, Upasana, over the Karmakanda and Jnanakanda processes. Next, the author describes that Upasana directed towards demigods is condemned. Right? So you establish worship of the Lord as Upasana, because that's the real thing. And then the demigods, which you could say are technically part of it, you know, as the angas and limbs of the Lord, but that part, that aspect of the Upasana is not important. So that is left out. There are two forms of Upasana. One, worship of the Lord, Supreme Lord, and two, worship of the demigods. In the current Adhikarana, the author states that worship of the demigods doesn't yield the same result as worship of the Supreme Lord, because they don't possess the quality of pure sattva as Lord Vishnu. Right? Means there is some sattva there. That's why they're devotees, and they have that aspect of goodness, because they can follow the rules and regulations, so they go to the heavenly planets. So you see, the better you can follow, the better you're situated and all that, then the higher up you go. But the same time is that because it has that, it's material sattva, and so it's the benefits you get from following the rules, or the satisfaction that I am following the rules and that aspect, you know, or I don't break the rules, you know, that kind of thing, then that can produce demigods. Right, the, those who leave this world, then next life they can go and become demigods. But if you worship the Supreme Lord, then it's about pleasing the Supreme Lord. So any rules and regulations are simply for the satisfaction of the Lord, and so that then becomes pure goodness, like the Lord. The Lord's pure goodness, and that desire, that is also then pure goodness, and so then that whole thing yields transcendental result. And so then one can then attain one's spiritual form in the spiritual world and carry on service on that plane as pure sattva. So we have to understand is, even though the demigods is basically ruled by goodness, we have to understand material goodness has some passion ignorance in it. Therefore, we see in the pastimes that some anomalies will come up because of that. But you're looking at the prominence. You know, so that's the point. So we see is that mode of goodness means looking at things, what's the prominence? So the prominence is goodness. And so you take it that that's a good thing. You know, and if the prominence, passion, or ignorance, but is there any connection with the Lord, any connection with something elevated? And if that is there, then that is considered good. So even though it may be predominantly passion or ignorance, but if there's some touch of they're trying to serve the Lord, trying to elevate themselves, then that's the good part, right? So this is mode of goodness, to be able to see, you know, but actually pure goodness, because goodness then will have that pride. One gets attached to it. One gets that I am good. I am, you know, what I do is good. My results are good. So therefore, there's this thought of a superior position. So you see that come up many times. The demigods, they emphasize their superior position to the humans or others, rather than the fortune to be able to serve the Lord and all that, and they're hoping for that fortune and others that they'll be able to serve in whatever capacity they're in. Right? The author next points out that even those aspiring for liberation only worship Narayana, giving up worship of all other demigods, then what to speak to the devotees who aspire for the highest goal, love of Godhead? So we see is that those Mayavadis and that who are talking about, you know, you can be this or that or all these things, then they're not actually very serious about liberation, because only Vishnu is known as Mukunda, not anything else. So they're saying, oh, you can meditate on anything, this, that. That's actually Buddhism. That's not even proper impersonalism. Because the impersonalism, it's based on Brahman. Brahman is Vishnu. And so therefore, the actual will understand that they worship Narayana. So they're going to be worshiping, though it may be have that temporary aspect of devotion, in that they are trying to worship the Lord to come to that liberated state, but at least they're focused just on the Lord. But those who then talk about this one, that one, all paths lead to the same thing and all that, then no, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. There, Krishna says there is one path, but where you are on the path, depending on your work, that's where you are. So yes, it's all one path, but you can't say all the same work gives the same results. Otherwise, you know, then we can take a brick, you know, and drop it into a pot of boiling water, boil it for 20 minutes, you know, take it out, put some salt and pepper, you know, and then serve it to that particular individual who's saying it's all one and all paths lead to the same, you know. So it's just, you know, it's just, it's not scientific. It's just a sentimental or a motivated position. So we see is that when those who are serious, then even they think that they become Brahman, they'll say that they're Narayan. They don't say that they're someone else like that. So the point is that actual upasana means worship of Vishnu. But in spite of having knowledge that the worship of Lord Vishnu yields the highest result, some people are still inclined to demigods worship because of being influenced by the most impassioned ignorance. Right, because they see that they can get a quick result, or they get a very specific result, because there's always the worries that you're worshiping Vishnu and he's going to purify you to bring you to a higher state, while the other is, no, as I am, I want to get what I want. You know, so that's not going to be very good, because whatever you are, you can only get the quality of something at the level you're at. Even if I give you something better, you won't appreciate it. You know, it means the demigods can appreciate the heavenly pleasures because of their heavenly position. Right? Therefore, in that position, they can engage their senses and therefore get the experience of the heavenly thing. But if you take an ordinary person and put them in the heavenly thing, it'll be a little bit better than what they're in, but they won't be able to actually take advantage and appreciate what is going on. So yeah. Thus, a devotee who desires to attain the highest goal, Krishna Prema, should engage only in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, who is the mode of pure goodness, right? So that pure goodness means there's no passion or ignorance, there's no desire for something, there's no misidentification, all these different things, right? Anucheda 18. In this way, it is concluded that one should give up efforts in karma, jnana, and vairagya, and perform bhakti to the Lord. Right? So karma and jnana, that we've heard, but vairagya also, we think that it's the detachment that is the advanced position. No, if the detachment is useful in Krishna's service, that's what we do. So therefore, Ambarish Maharaj is engaging all the senses and all facility in Krishna's service. At the same time, you see the four Kumaras, they keep nothing and they're engaged in the Lord's service. So it's just a matter of your position and what is favorable for you at this time. But the focus is on pleasing Krishna, right? So one, it's a secondary aspect of vairagya, and so it has its usefulness in supporting the direct aspects of Krishna consciousness. So if that direct aspect of Krishna consciousness is there, then we can see that it's useful, because detachment means you're detached from the material energy for yourself. It doesn't mean the volume of material energy you're detached from, you know, or what's the quality of the material energy that you're detached from. It means these can be supportive, but that's not actually the point of vairag. Vairag means it's not mine, it's Krishna's. That's the real. So devotional service already includes Vairakarma, activities, jnana, knowledge of the Lord, you know, and Vairagya, detachment from the material energy. One should also not worship devatas, which is part of karma. And what to speak of worshiping other living entities, right? So we're not worshiping the demigods and all that. Why would we be worshiping someone else? You know, we wouldn't be, Swifties or, you know, something else like that. You give up all that worship of other living entities and you're just absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This is explained in 7 verses. Brahma and Shiva should not be worshipped by persons desiring the highest goal. Though they are guna avatars of the Lord, they are not directly part of Brahman like Vishnu, right? They lack the advantage of pure sattva and have a prominence of rajas and tamas. The following is also quoted in Paramatma Sandarbha. Right? So even though the guna avatars, they're taking charge of those aspects, but they themselves aren't situated in that aspect. Their service is not there. So therefore, worshiping them in the capacity, because you're worshiping Brahma and Shiva as demigods, as incarnations of the Lord, but then there's going to be the predominance of passion and ignorance. So you're not going to get the effect of Vishuddha Sattva. But if you're worshiping them as devotees, as great devotees, the head of the Sampradaya, and as the greatest devotee, and that, then that aspect, then you're worshiping devotees, but that's in the context of the Lord. So we're seeing here is we're not seeing as, oh, because of their position, that's why we're worshiping. So then from Paramatma Sandarbha, the one supreme Purusha, accepting the gunas of Prakriti, known as Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas for creation, maintenance, and destruction, is called Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The best results for the devotees will come from Vishnu with Shuddha Sattva Shakti, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.3. So even though Vishnu is controlling the mode of goodness, because maintenance is something that only Vishnu can do, you can't, it means you follow Krishna's rules and then follow his laws, you can therefore act in the capacity as a instrument for things being maintained. You know, like we can clean the house every day, we can, you know, do different things that we do every day, but that the potency that it actually works and has the advantage is only coming from Krishna. So Krishna's Vishuddha Sattva, though he's controlling the mode of goodness here, but in that, the mixed mode of goodness, then he'll have passion and ignorance. Those passion and ignorance are controlled by Vishnu and Shiva, I mean, by Brahma and Shiva. So Vishnu only works with the aspect of pure goodness. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. That Lord Sri Krishna, by his plenary parts, should be rendered devotional service, as explained above, is confirmed by this statement. Lord Sri Krishna and all his plenary parts are Vishnu Tattva, or the lordship of Godhead. From Sri Krishna, the next manifestation is Baladeva. From Baladeva is Sankarsana. From Sankarsana is Narayana. From Narayana, there's the second Sankarsana. And from this Sankarsana, the Vishnu Purusha avatars. The Vishnu, or the deity of the quality of goodness in the material world, is the Purusha avatar known as Kiradakshai Vishnu, or Paramatma. Brahma is the deity of Rajas, passion, and Shiva of ignorance. They are the three departmental heads of the three qualities of this material world. Creation is made possible by the goodness of Vishnu, and when it destroys, requires to be destroyed, Lord Shiva does it by the Tandava Nritya, the dance of destruction. Right? The materialists and foolish human beings worship Brahma and Shiva respectively, but the pure transcendentalists worship the form of goodness, Vishnu, in his various forms, right? Because the potency for it is still coming from the Lord. But those who don't understand this, they'll worship Brahma and Lord Shiva because they think that will create or destroy. But actually, Vishnu, he's the one, it's his potency that makes everything work. So if you're maintaining, then you're on the transcendental position. What's the need of creation and destruction? You just do things on the transcendental platform. The transformations will be on the transcendental platform. you know, or the effects will be on that transcendental platform. And so therefore our consciousness will remain on that transcendental platform. But if you worship Vishnu and, I mean, Brahma and Shiva, then you're going to be dealing with passion ignorance. So then you're going to be dealing with past and future. And so I'm working on the thing, thinking about how in the past you did it, thinking about in the future what benefits I'm going to get. And to that degree that you're in the moment and concentrating on what you're doing, to that degree, then, you know, the mechanics will work out nicely. But the point is if you just focus on the present, what needs to be done, and you know from the present where it's supposed to go, then it works. So in other words, if it's about the past or the future, and therefore you're focusing on the present, you'll only focus on that as long as until you get what you want. As soon as you get what you want, it immediately moves into the past and you'll be functioning there. So in the mode of ignorance. But if you're dealing in pure goodness, then you're always dealing in the present. And naturally the future comes, you can see that, and the past in relationship to the present. So it doesn't take on those limited qualities of passion and ignorance. It maintains its transcendental position. So you can be focusing on the present, but comparing it to what transformation is happening and what was the previous experience. But because you're seeing in the context of the present, in serving the Lord, it maintains that position of goodness. Right? Does that make sense? So this is going to be the difference. The devotee, because they're working on that point of pure goodness, it's not actually passion and ignorance. Everything is in the present. So the future, you're seeing it in the present. The past, you're seeing it in the present. Right? It means the present's there. You're looking at it in the context of what was the situations in the past and what it is right now. But you're looking at what it is now, you know, and you look where it's going, but where it is now in that process of going. So one doesn't lose the position of being in the present. Well, for the materialists, they're constantly going to be switching. Even though working in the present, they'll be thinking, oh, this is what I'll get. This is what was the experience before, and this and that. So they're always going to be moving in and out and moving through the modes. Well, for the devotees, they can just function in the present and see everything in the context of Krishna. Therefore, that pure goodness already includes that concept of future and past, but it's always in the present. Well, the others, they're not actually living in the present. They disappear into the future and disappear into the past, the mind. So it's a different thing. So how the materialist functions, how the devotees function, even though mechanically it looks the same, it's quite different. And the effect is therefore different. Because the subtleties are what makes it happen. You have something in your mind, therefore then you desire and you act and engage the senses. That engages the body. So we see it goes naturally from desire there. So if the desire is on pleasing the Lord, therefore the mechanics will also carry that aspect. So this need to see, no, we have to see the external. It means the external will be there, but the point is we always have to remember it, the mechanics of the material world don't belong to the material world. They belong to Krishna. They're his mechanics. He just gives a reflection of them here so that we can engage in them. And therefore, you know, according to our nature of Satchidananda, we can, in a situation and in relation to that, we can act in a way that we get a result that gives us a particular experience. But that potency is coming from him. He's Parabrahman. Our Satchidananda does not include the things we're working with. But Krishna's Satchidananda expands as everything. His sat potency is everything that we're working with, everything we perceive. His chit potency is all the knowledge and how to operate that and how to actually, you know, how movement works and transformation works. And Krishna is all happiness, all ananda is all coming from him. He is ananda. We're not producing it. We can come in contact with it. So we can either come in contact with it directly through its internal potency, or we can deal indirectly through it, through the external, where we don't see his connection, even though he's still there. So this idea is that, you know, to be practical, we have to do what the karmis do. No, We do what we do. The mechanics may be the same. You have to remember, the professional and successful mechanics of this material world come from Krishna, not from these people. Otherwise, it is. Why is it that it comes and goes? Success remains, and who is successful comes and goes. Right? Who is famous? Fame remains, but who's famous comes and goes. Who's wealthy comes and goes, but the wealth remains. You know, you can say, oh, but, you know, the market crashed, or all that money disappeared. No, but the principle of money is there. Otherwise, how can it come back? I was by some adjustments and putting in something here and there and people moving around, you know, their interests and all that. Then suddenly the market goes back up again. Because it's already there. It's just a matter of whether it manifests or not. So this idea that professionalism comes from the materialists is 100% bogus. It's coming from Krishna. It's his. They may, by their karma, be doing some good things. And because we want to do good things for Krishna, successful things, therefore we might look and take some tips on some art of what they're doing. But the science of what they're doing, they wouldn't have a clue. Literally, they would not have a clue why it's working. They have some insight. They have colloquial wisdom like that. But they don't actually understand what is underpinning it all, what makes it function, how Krishna makes all this work. It's his energy. They have no idea. No idea. So that aspect has to be appreciated, that they don't know. And so therefore, this limited what you can take from them. You know, you go in to start the car, you turn the key, and then, to get it starting, but you notice there's a grinding sound, so you let go. So then, you know, you wonder, then you see someone else is more expert at it. They just turn it, and as soon as they get that boom sound, then they let go. And then you think, oh, okay, so that's the art. But it's not that they created that, because the mechanics of that, someone had to, quote unquote, invent it. In other words, he was able to work with the material energy in a way that material energy allowed. It's not that he invented. He put in the effort, and due to his karma, the material energy through Krishna's sanction revealed to him how the mechanics work and how he could use it. And so then he thinks, yeah, see, I invented this. It's mine. No, you simply saw it. It's already there in the material energy. That's why you come out with your thing and it's the unique thing and everybody has to buy from you. But give it a few years and there's another 10, 20 items on the market doing what you're doing, and many times in very different ways. You know, it's a similar kind of effect, but some of them are kind of similar with the small tweaks, and some of them are completely different. Principles remain the same, but details are so different. You know, it's just like you have a two-cycle engine, a four-cycle engine, and a rotary engine, you know? And then you have those, you know, turbos and then ramjets and all these different things. But the main point is they're exposing fuel to air and fire. And it creates a movement that they're able to harness. So the principle remains the same. So it's a motor or an engine. You know, so you say a rocket engine. It's still an engine. So the mechanics of it, somebody's able to understand, but the in material nature is there, and then it disappears, and then it comes back, just like you see. So with so much scientific and mechanical development, you know, thousands of years ago, and then at some point, let's say the Greeks, they had their, you know, dark ages, and everything was for God, everything. And then it had to build again. And then in Europe, everything was forgotten. And then again, they start. So the thing is that the science that they started, you know, getting into, and astrology and the elliptical movement of the planets and all that, you know, that they finalized in the 1700s was already being discussed before the Middle Ages. It was already part of the you know, Greco-Roman Empire. They were already people thinking like this. But then, due to, you know, whatever it is, the social conditions and all that, then it all becomes forgotten. You know, things get forgotten pretty easily. You know, just like you look at, you know, the kid. How long does he remember he's supposed to clean his room, right? And how often, right? So very quickly it all becomes lost. So this being lost and all that, this is the mode of ignorance. And that mode of ignorance, then that is controlled by the Lord ultimately, but through Lord Shiva, through false ego. So how does the I falsely identify that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer? And therefore, then, you know, one wants to perform activities to get that benefit. But, and so that you, I have to work in the present. So those who are smart know I work in the present without attachment, without, you know, have focus, you know, have these things. Then I get the benefit. Right? But so we see is that, how you say, Yudhishthir Maharaj makes the point. If you want to be, so, because he's asked, what's the success formula? And he says, you know, having knowledge of the, you know, the, you know, this having within the field of knowledge, then you perform endeavor without attachment. You know, so you need focus, you need endeavor, you need detachment. You know, focus comes when I have knowledge and I know who I am, what I'm supposed to do, and what has to be done. Right? So then I can apply that as an endeavor, but I have to be detached from the results, because as it goes, sometimes it works the way you think it will, sometimes it doesn't. If you're attached, you'll get frustrated. Your focus is lost. Your endeavor stops. But if you maintain the detachment that as it transforms, if it goes this way, then I make an endeavor to make it go that way, you know, the way I want. If it goes that way, I continue doing what I don't. But if I lose focus and sit back and, wow, isn't this fabulous, then it there's a problem. So those three have to be there, that focus, that endeavor, and that detachment. And those who are successful, they'll follow those three. No exceptions. No exception. That's just, it's Krishna's energy. So that's the whole point. He expands. He comes down. He is the separated energy. So the material world is separated because you don't see Krishna. Spiritual world, everything reminds you of Krishna, because it's this internal potency. But here, the external potency, it's still, you don't see him, even though it's him pervading everything that makes everything work. It exists because he's pervading, it's him. It acts and gives results because of him, and it gives an experience because of him. If he doesn't pervade it, it doesn't happen. So this idea that the material nature is one thing and then Krishna consciousness another, has to be given up. No, there's only Krishna consciousness. Right? And then you can have the negative of the lack of Krishna consciousness. It's not that you have material and spiritual. You have spiritual and then lack of that spiritual understanding. You see it all in connection to Krishna, or you don't see it in connection to Krishna. That's the difference. But otherwise, mechanics is the same. It's the same potencies. Just whether it's in their full form or whether it's in their shadow or reflected form. That's all. There isn't something else. So this idea that, you know, there's this grand plan of how to implement what the karmis do, it doesn't exist. It never has and never will. Because for them, it's their karma. Therefore, they're getting the result. As soon as their karma's up, they disappear. They just disappear. The person's famous today, they're the biggest, they're the latest, and then the next day nobody cares. And, you know, he just disappears. Whatever is the field, in fame, in wealth, in power, in knowledge, you know, in influence, whatever it is, it all just disappears. Because it's not them doing it. They have the karma to take part in it and be an instrument through its manifestation, and they get to therefore experience that and even say that, you know, they have a connection with it. It's their quota. But ultimately, no, there's nothing that is theirs. It's all Krishna's. Just they foolishly claim it's theirs, but it's not. So one has to be very clear on this. Then one can have the proper vision. Otherwise, then one will always speculate, because if you don't understand this, you actually don't understand religion. Right? The basis of religion is this, that it's Krishna. Krishna is religion. Krishna is tattva. He's knowledge. And so if you understand that he is religion, then you can understand that everything, therefore, because religion means the nature of things, therefore Krishna is the nature of everything. And it works according to Krishna's direction. So coming up with all these other things, they're just material. You may try to connect them to Krishna. That's nice. But the effects of it are not going to be as strong as if you have knowledge. Krishna mentions that in the pastime of Govardhan Leela, is that when he's asking Nanda Baba, so do you know why this works or what's the background? He says, no. And he says, but any effort made with knowledge will give a better result than one made without knowledge. So one can't claim that this is the topmost position. It may be a start. Okay, that's nice. It's a start. But don't claim that this is some fabulous, wonderful thing that's going to save the world. It's not. It never has, never will. With that. Is that okay? Any questions on that? Or yes, please, Charles. Gee.
So it's occurring to me that as far as natural attraction is concerned, one has to, because otherwise, if you think you need to accumulate or acquire something, you're going to be more naturally inclined to worship Brahma. And if you think you need to get rid of something, or, you know, destroy something or forget something, you're going to be more naturally inclined to worship Lord Shiva. So as far as naturally inclined, you'd have to be almost an Atma Rama to be just attached to worship of Vishnu.
But you can also be attached to the idea that this is what is the perfection, because the soul, we always have to remember, the soul is always the soul. Even if they're in an impure state, what's impure is the consciousness. The soul itself is still the same soul. They're still brilliant as a million suns. They're still transcendental. They identify as something less. It's just like, let's say you have an adult and they're really absorbed in, let's say, a small toddler playing. And so they sit down with them, they interact with them and all that. So they're functioning on that platform like the toddler, right? But their position as an adult doesn't change. So they may be doing all the things to be done and the relationship's going really well. But then, you know, when someone else comes along, then they'll say is, you know, oh, hey, we need you to do this, some adult stuff. And then they come in and take over with the kid. And then that person goes and does what they do. So it's just a matter of, yes, that spontaneous platform is going to take time. But the using the intelligence to know that this is the better choice, that you can make right now.
So it takes intelligence, proper association then.
Yes, otherwise, because, go ahead.
Yeah, otherwise it just won't, in other words, otherwise it won't be natural, we won't even understand it. But with association,
yes,
then. Because so
it's a regulated natural, because the soul's nature is to serve Krishna. It's not something else. So it's a regulated natural. It's a formalized natural. Then there's the spontaneous natural. Unnatural is anything other than that. So we have to switch the view. Then if we switch the view, then we can appreciate what we've been given.
Conditional natural, but not conditional natural.
Yeah, because conditional is not actually natural.
Yeah.
You know, it means unnatural has its natural form. You could put it that way. Because it's a reflection, therefore everything's going to have that element of backwards. So that's why then the acharyas mentioned that it's erroneous to think that because the material nature has form and action and experiences and all these, and I'm suffering, therefore to be happy I have to do the opposite of that. That's still the material is doing the opposite. It's transformed, reflected. It's you know, you're standing this way and the shadow goes that way, the sun's on this side, the shadow's on that side. it's always has that opposite aspect. And so we have to understand is that's not how it works. It's natural state, it's purified state. That's then what we're looking for. So in the spontaneity that someone is attracted, that's a drop of spontaneity. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, is that there is only the transcendental position. It means your consciousness can be absorbed in the mundane. It means to not have that. So the degree you don't have that functioning on that, to the degree you become mundane. But that transcendental position is the natural situation of the living entity. That Vishuddha Sattva, that's their natural situation. You can give that up by being attracted to the passion ignorance, as you mentioned, that you want to get something done, you want to remove an obstacle. So there's always going to be what's favorable, what's unfavorable. Remove unfavorable, gain what's favorable. So from Brahma, you get what's favorable. From Shiva, you get what you remove, what's unfavorable. Like this. You know, you may say, no, but they worship Shiva for wealth. You know, he gets something. But no, they're worshiping him to get rid of being poor.
Right.
You know, so you're removing the poorness, then you're rich. Well, Brahma, then you may be worshiping to get the wealth. It's a different mentality.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, for Ganesh, the remover of obstacles, is that since he's removing, is that ignorance? Or is it since it's getting rid of the obstacles so you can get what you want, it's passion, or is it a mix?
Whose son is he?
Shiva's, yeah, so... That's what
it
I figured.
It has that aspect, but at the same time, as you see, it's a dynamic because it's saying that the position is favorable. So you're going to have that aspect of the situational and the mechanical. That's then what he'll be representing. So that's right. Always the secondary to support the primary. Right? So then the devotees worship Vishvakshena, who's the commander-in-chief of the Vaikuntha army. And so he sees that there's no obstacles to anyone's devotional service or to the situations that are there to perform service in. And so then he becomes very nicely, you know. And then in here, then he becomes Ganesh and Skanda. So Skanda is that dynamic, you know, fighting and, you know, that action there. But this is the situation. The situation is auspicious. So you remove obstacles, you know, for that. So when you're seeing in connection with Krishna consciousness, it's not about the mode of ignorance. There may be some bit, or some bit, but it's not ignorance. There's no avidya. It's working within the realm of vidya. But for the others, it's working in the realm of ignorance, even though it may be removing something so that you can get something. But I'm just saying, what's the basis of it? There's always an overlap. You know, like you see, right. Is the definitions that it's from the Hladini potency that all the associates of the Lord manifest, right? And the places, everything manifests because of the you know, the Dham, the pastimes, the paraphernalia, the devotees all manifest from Hladini potency. The same time as we see is that the forms of the devotees, the form of the Dham, Krishna's form all manifests from Sandin. Same time, it's mentioned that Baladev, through his, you know, through the Kriya Shakti, through the Samvit, then manifests all the realms and everything. So we're saying that from each of these, the same thing is being manifest. Right? So this causes then confusion that then people write different charts and different things and put different arrows to try to work all this out. So that's how you come up with a different kind of views, and each one saying this one's better than that one. Or that. But the point is, no, they all go together. It's because of Krishna's desire for the pleasure of interacting with the devotees on prema. Therefore, then the devotees are manifest. Right? The mechanical, what they are manifest through, that's the sandini. But that manifestation of Krishna's desires going on, that's because of Baladev and the Samvit or the Kriya. That's why it's called the Anubhav and the Prabhav and the Vibhav. you know. It's that, what are the situations, the spiritual, material, or neutral? What is the how things are happening, you know? So that'll be the kriya, you know. And it's got icha kriya and jnana, because that's what's influencing the many like that. But what is the experience gain? That will be samvit sandhi-niladi. Right? Same principle, but depending upon its application, it has its particular flavor. Therefore, the detail is given and a different name is given to it. And so that's all Satchidananda. That's all Krishna. So everything's coming from his form. When it says his form is the source of everything, because that's what it is. Because Sat comes from his form. Chit comes from his Ananda. His form is that. And so everything in these fields, it's just a matter of what's the flavor difference in them. You know, so that's the training, is to understand these finer points. I mean, ultimately, to understand Krishna is all coming from Krishna, and surrender to Krishna and serve Krishna under the direction of the guru and the acharyas. Then everything works. But as you go, you see finer and finer of these points. And so then that's what we have to see, is that it's all coming from Krishna. It's all coming from this platform. So there is, technically speaking, there is no material world. There's the inferior manifestation of God's creation. But there's no such thing as the material world, because it's all Krishna. Material means that there's no Krishna. It means everything is Krishna. So there isn't something separate from Krishna. So that's the point, is when you're dealing, what's seeing everything in context of Krishna, then it has its use. Seeing things not in connection with Krishna, that, you know, going around or there's some simpler thing or quicker thing, that's then what's the mundane. And that's why then the worship of the demigods is condemned, because we're seeing them as the managers of the material world rather than the servants of the Lord. And since they're the servants of the Lord, then we just have to worship the Lord and his direct servants, because these demigods, I think, are in the eighth of Varna of expansions from the Lord. And so the eighth of Varna comes from the seventh. The seventh comes from the sixth from the fifth, fourth, third, fourth. And so then it all goes back to that first, which will be Radha and Krishna and their associates, their direct associates. So therefore, why do you need to worship the demigods when you're already worshiping? You know, you're worried about, you know, Indra and power, but, you know, you're already worshiping Lalita. You know, so it means there's no need of any of this. You just worship Krishna in with his devotees, and everything's taken care of. There's no need of anything else. So it's not that you get more from the eighth of Varna than you would from the first. We have to remember is that as you expand, that's the whole point of the nature of that. You know, when Vishnu expansion, Swamsa, means it's manifesting a little less power than the last. So who expands? That's like Kiradakshaya, Vishnu manifests less power than Garbhodaksha, who manifests less than Karanadaksha, who's less than Sankarshan, who's less than Mahanarayan, who's less than the original of Sankarshan, who's less than Balaram, who's less than Krishna. So therefore, you're not going to get more out of the eighth of Varna than you would out of the first. So why we would think that there's an importance to worship the demigods? It's foolish. If you worship Krishna, Krishna includes his associates. So even if you're just worshiping him, like in Purusha Shukta, it already includes everything, because it's already talking about the creation and the manifestation and how things are going on and everything like that. Is that good? We seem to have lost Charu Chandra. Did we talk him under the table or something? And oh, okay.
Yes, thank you. Someone came, so I had to deal with something, but I was listening. Yes, thank you.
Okay. It wasn't that. It was an overload, and he just kind of slid under the table and all that. And so that was it. Okay. Anything? So we're starting to get the gist of this, is we have to see is that it's Krishna and Krishna alone. And then everything seen in context of him, that's just wonderful. And that, why is it Radha Krishna then is considered the most, the highest, because that relationship of Krishna and his energies is inherent. They're non-different, but the interaction between him, the existence of his potencies, then is inherent. It's just who he is. But when you interact with those potencies, then that's going to give a higher taste, right? To be in a nice, let's say I take you into the presidential suite, you know, on the penthouse of the biggest hotel, and walk you through. Okay, it's nice. It's nice to be there. But isn't it better if you can sit there and do something? You know, go jump on the bed or, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's better, right? Go stand out on the balcony or something. No, but then better than that is the experience you're getting from it, right? So then better than that then is the interact. But what it is the experience. So that means the experience of the Hladini is going to be more than that of the Sambit or the Sandini. But it's not that they're separate. It means the Hladini experience is coming through the medium of the interaction going on among the devotees and Sambit in the situation Sandini. So that together makes that rasa, that makes that experience. So that's what we're trying to get to, is to appreciate is there. Therefore, Krishna interacting with Srimati Radharani gives Krishna the most pleasure. That's why it's the highest, not because we think it's cool and all that. And, you know, sahaja is saying, I am or that, or we can do this. That. No, it's because Krishna, it's pleasing to Krishna. Right, and then down from that, then you have Dwarka, which is a mix of majesty and sweetness, and then Vaikuntha, which is majesty. Right, then you come into the material world where you have the higher planetary systems, you know, because they're following the mode of goodness and following the laws of God, you know, trying their best, though they, you know, they mess up now and again, but basically speaking, you could say most of the predominance of the time they are. Then you have the earthly planet where it's kind of like sometimes you're doing good, sometimes bad, you know, sometimes in connection with God, sometimes not. You know, like that. And then you have the lower planets where they couldn't care less about God. They're just following all these things because of the benefit they get. You know, and so in this way, it goes down. And then you get where they don't even follow the things. They don't care about God and they don't follow. So then that puts them down on, you know, Patal and the hellish planet. So it's all what is connected with Krishna, what is pleasing to Krishna. How much is seen in that context, and that much you get the benefit. And when you can see like that, then you actually see. Otherwise, before that, you're connecting whatever you're doing to Krishna. That's going to be good, because that's what the eternal associates do. They connect everything to Krishna. And so then when you see is that you do how much you can, and when you can see is that, no, you can see through this. And then when I see like this and I can apply this, right? I see like this, it's the theory. I can apply like this. You know, I mean, that's the art. I mean, so I know how to apply. Then that combination makes the science. So the science is the practically applicable theory. That's the science. To just say it's theory means they're not either showing how it becomes science, or the person who's making that comment can't see like that. Right? So if that's the case, then you explain it in a way that has that application to it. You show the art to it and how it would go, at least the principles of the art, and then the person themselves can then apply that within the conditions they're in, because the details always change. That's why it's art. It's always, you always have to adjust it. You always have to do something. It's, you have to be able to adjust the situation. I remember there would be, I think I mentioned this before, there would be, I forget what they were doing. They were doing, I think, the play, stage play of, I think, The Odd Couple. It was, I can't remember what's the details, but the, you know, it's probably something ridiculous or stupid. But in any case, there's two guys that are living in a place and like that, and they have to interact and all that. And I think they're quite different in personality. And so that's why it's odd couple. But I remember there's some scene where they're setting up for the dinner like that. And then in this, there's some, I mean, at least in this production, they were using some pasta, some spaghetti. And so then they do something, you know, I mean, so someone goes into the kitchen to get it. It's already been put there as a prop. But then someday they go in there and the spaghetti, you know, when it's hot, you can throw it and it'll stick on the wall. So the spaghetti is all over the wall. And this is, they're acting in front of a live audience. This is not a rehearsal. And so they have to adjust with all this. And so they just keep in character and act. Or another time is a similar thing. Maybe it's the same thing. And that there was a sandwich, right? And the guy picks up and takes a bite of the sandwich because he doesn't have a line while the other guy talks. And so one day they put a whole ton of chili or mustard or onions or something really, you know, they made like an onion and Limburger cheese sandwich, you know, something terrible. And when he bites it, then, you know, he just wants to spit it out and start yelling. But he has to stay in character as if it's a great sandwich and go on acting. So that's the thing. Art means you have to adjust because the situation never stays the same because you're interacting with other living entities and they have a different idea than you. Right? They want to have fun seeing you try to stay in character when they put the pressure on. And for them, that was a great night. And they'll sit around and laugh about it, even though you're harassing the guy. But they'll say, well, that was great. You know, you stayed in character and all that. You know, I could see your eyes watering. No, but, you know, it's cool how you turned your head and, you know, you sneezed, wiped your eye. He just did something in character. So that's the thing is art means you have to adjust. So if you don't understand the principle of acting here, you can't adjust. So if you don't understand the principle of what you're doing with, so without the theory, you don't actually get the science. So some naturally have it due to karma. Others then learn it, then they can do it. Others, they have an inherent knowledge of it and they can do it. So the point is the more you have of these three, the better. So the science of Krishna consciousness, since this is our life as souls, this is what we want to do eternally. So then therefore, why wouldn't we be learning this? Why wouldn't this be important? Why would we be thinking that, you know, all this stuff that the karmis do and, you know, their methods is the main thing and that will make, you know, Krishna consciousness great again. It doesn't make sense, you know? So, that's it. So you have, what is it? What is it? Muga? Then you change it to Miga, right? Make ISKCON great again. So we can make hats, you know? Huh? That would be interesting, right? Everyone's walking around with those, the same hat, but just with the eye, you know?
There's actually one... I think you've heard of him. He made shirts. It was the exact shirt, but it said "Make America Krishna Conscious Again" instead of "Great Again." And it looked, but it looked exactly like that shirt. Not the, you know, not the hat, but the shirt with the, you know, the stars and the stripes, and it's in red and blue. And it said "Make America Krishna Conscious." And so, you know, when you first see that someone wearing that shirt, you think, okay, they're definitely a Trump supporter because you don't, you know, you never read the whole thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They just have to get the hat instead of the MAGA hat. Then you have the MEGA hat. Yeah, yeah. But that would be funny, right? You know, so the that whole idea that you have to appreciate that it's a descending process. It's not something else because there's Krishna and everything's expanding from him. So there's nothing that's not Krishna. Even we're part and parcel of Krishna. So in that way, we're we're non-different from Krishna, but at the same time as jivas, we're particles of Krishna, and that way then we have our separate consciousness. You know, so that way that makes us superior to the external energy, which is unconscious. Right? And so this way is then we appreciate that it goes down, that they are... Yeah, does that make sense? We'll continue then here. But the pure transcendentalists worship the form of goodness, Vishnu, in his various forms. Vishnu is manifest by his millions and billions of integrated forms and separated forms, right? So there's integrated, the Vishnu Tattva, you know, and the separated forms, you know, then the particular, the at least us, the Jiva Tattva and the material energy is there. The Shakti Tattva, that is the internal potency, it is separate, but at the same time, it's well integrated. So it works very nicely. So we want to come under that form. The integrated forms are called Godhead, and the separated forms are called the living entities of the Jivas. Both the Jivas and Godhead have their original spiritual forms. Jivas are sometimes subjected to the control of material energy, but the Vishnu forms are always controllers of this energy. When Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, appears in the material world, he comes to deliver the conditioned living entities who are under material energy. Such living beings appear in the material world with intentions of being lords, and thus they become entrapped by the three modes of nature. As such, the living entities have to change their material coverings for undergoing the different forms of imprisonment. The prison house of the material world is created by Brahma under the instruction of the personality of Godhead. And the prison house, and at the conclusion of a kalpa, the whole thing is destroyed by Shiva. But as far as maintenance of the prison house is concerned, it is done by Vishnu. As much as the state prison house is maintained by the state, anyone therefore wishes to get out of this prison house of material existence, which is full of miseries like repetition of birth, death, disease, and old age, must please Lord Vishnu for such liberation. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service only. If anyone has to continue prison life in the material world, he may ask for relative facilities for temporary relief from the different demigods like Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Varuna. No demigod, however, can release the imprisoned living being from the conditioned life and material existence. This can be done only by Vishnu. Therefore, the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23, purport. Right, so temporary relief can be gained from these demigods, but the point is if that temporary relief is not engaged in Krishna's service, then there's no benefit whatsoever. So you just waste the time. So by worshiping Krishna, then naturally all his parts and parcels are already included. And so then whatever is our sphere of worship, so when we worship Radha Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and the Acharyas, then we see is that everything's taken care of nicely. And then on different days, we may have different forms of the Lord, Nrisimha Chaturdasi or Vamana Dwadasi or Ram Navami, and then them, Krishna, and then his devotees in that form, that situation. So everything's nicely taken care of. So we don't have to worry separately for them. But at the same time, as that Baba mentions, if you pray to the demigod for developing love for Krishna, then naturally that's there. But as we said, why would you be praying to the eighth Varna manifestation when you could be praying to the first Varna manifestation? But if you happen to be there and there's a demigod temple, then you might pray to them for their benediction to become a pure devotee of Krishna. And then that's fine. But you wouldn't go out of your way. You know, if the only temple there is a Shiva temple, then you go to Shiva and every day take darshan as a devotee and pray for his mercy to become a devotee of Krishna. But if it's a Krishna temple and the Shiva temple is not there, you wouldn't go. You know, if we're in the courtyard of that Krishna temple, there's a Shiva temple, then you'll offer obeisances, you'll offer respects. So that's the thing, is that the worship of the demigods is condemned as demigods, but as devotees, it's not condemned, but it's already included in the higher avarnas. You don't need to use these lower or recognize these lower avarnas. And so then it works out nicely. But if that lower avarna is there, then you have no problem offering that respect. Right? Is that okay? We're good? Okay. So it's 8:30, so then we'll stop here. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So Jagadish's phone left. Oh, okay. That's a t-shirt. Okay. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, so it's so interesting how Prabhupada is in the purport is he's giving that main thing. What's the main point? Talking on that. That's all. That's the thing, and everything else is thrown out. And then he brings it down. And so therefore, then there's the Lord, and then there's expansions. And then these expansions connect with the Lord. Then these demigods, you know, they have their limited position that you might interact with them based on your relationship with the Lord. But it comes back to, therefore, we just ultimate benefit can only be getting from Vishnu. So he starts from the top, brings it down to where we are, then shows practical things how we might deal with it, and takes it back to the top again. So very, very nice form. I mean, just the perfection of the, you know, the logic, the mimamsa is just so good. But this is the descending thing. Thank God. Is that, yeah. Okay, so we'll see you all. Haribo, Chinese time.